Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for joining us again today on our podcast. Today we welcome Caleb McKellar and Nadia Johnston, both from Andre Pinar and Associates. And we are talking once again about lying on your CV, something that has been quite well communicated everywhere after the new qualifications Framework Amendment Act in 2019, August, was signed into existence and into law by President Cyril Ramaphosa. And today we're talking about the implications specifically to employers, although it is well known that it is expected that most companies would do verification checks. We want to unpack the implication to both the employer and the employees, and just to understand that what the act really means. Obviously, it's been said that you could get a hefty fine of up to 5 years in jail or both, and that it's not just your qualifications on your CV, but also your professional career qualifications that you mention on social media platforms that might be affected. The South African Qualifications Association, SAQA, also mentioned that they would be in the process of naming and shaming these trespassers should they be found guilty of lying on their CV. Welcome Caleb, welcome Nadia. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Skalk, thanks for having us. Myself and Nadia, it's great to be back, and we're looking forward to an informative session.
Great. So let's start at the beginning. The Act was signed into law. There was big noise about, you can go to jail or get a fine or imprisonment or both. What has happened since then, and what can you tell us about specifically the implication from a legal perspective for employers and employees?
Cool. So let's start with the history, because we can always learn from that. But initially, there was a South African Qualifications Authority Act in 1995, and that was repealed in 2008 by the National Qualifications Framework Act. And now the act we're speaking about in 2019 is an amendment to the 2008 Act. So when your clients try find this act on the internet, it's not going to make much sense just to read the amendment. The amendment sets out in eight or so pages what is included in the 2008 Act. So it's best to read the two together, because that will make the most sense. Essentially, what the amendment has tried to do is tighten up the National Qualifications Framework Act of 2008, and try to ensure that employers and employees can access and verify qualifications, full-time or part-time qualification certificates, through a portal in one particular place. But we'll obviously go into more detail about what is required for both an employer and employee in terms of the act.
What is your experience been, Nadia, with these qualifications? Have you had clients that have approached you with concerns since it's happened last year? Has there been an actual impact? Because we read about it and we know about it, but what is the actual implication and impact been on ground zero for people that work with these legal issues every day?
I don't think at Andre Pinar and Associates we've had a specific case, but obviously with every amendment that was born out of some type of issue that had to be addressed or some type of problem or lacuna that was found by the legislator in society or wherever it might have been. So we've noticed that there's been a sort of an upward trend of these sorts of people lying on their CVs or presenting false documents as being true documents, be it like a qualification or some type of certificates. So MIE, being the Management Integrity Evaluation, they went and had a look and they noticed that this upward trend. So they saw, for example, in 2016, that there were 44,000 cases of people lying on their CVs, which then increased to about 50,000 in 2017. So that upward spike is something to be concerned about. And so this act comes about to try and address that. And then, I mean, just outside of just the broader spectrum, we can zoom into specific cases. And Careers 24 actually did a list of about six or so high-profile people who've been found guilty of such things. I mean, to name but one, SABC CEO, Claudia Mutsing, which is something very, very prevalent in the news and in the media that we were all hearing about. So while we, you know, haven't seen specific cases yet, we can, you know, in just the media around us see such cases, yeah.
Absolutely. So, Caleb, I mean, what is the bigger picture for, you know, employers, our clients? So, you know, although we pride ourselves on verification of all qualifications as well as criminal verifications, and if the job, if it's an inherent part of the job, you know, credit check, all of those aspects of candidate verifications we do offer as part of our service. A lot of companies do their own recruitment, have their own internal recruitment departments. Not everybody uses a either a recruitment partner or an external provider. You know, what is the alternative for them to make sure that whoever they want to appoint or whoever they have in their staff, even at the stage, if there should be an audit, that those qualifications are really true as presented on their CVs?
So the new amendment to the Act has introduced a whole new section dealing with the employer's rights and obligations. And it's gone as far as to include organs of state, employers, educational institutions, skill development providers. And all these organs and bodies and juristic entities are now required to authenticate prior to appointment or registration of a particular employee if the qualification or part qualification that the particular employee is presenting is and has formed part of the National Learner's Records database. So that's quite an onerous obligation that's now being placed on employers, especially in this climate where we're seeing a lot of retrenchments and a lot of very immediate appointments. I'm sure you have noticed an uptrend in that.
Yes.
Employers must understand that they can't simply employ individuals and take their CV at face value.
Mm-hmm.
The Act now requires that they themselves are responsible for this check. And we're finding that most internal HR are insufficiently prepared or educated in order to do these checks, because an HR manager in a company is responsible for many other tasks, managing the current employees.
Yes.
And so I think if these companies were to consult with an external service provider like yourselves, who can verify before even arranging for an interview that the qualifications set out on the CV are in fact registered on the national database and are what they purport to be, the employer will have already ticked that box before even having an interview. And I think that's why companies in your position, Edge Exec, would see an upturn in business due to this amendment, although not possibly immediately, because it normally takes about a year for people to come alive to the implications of legislation that is brought into effect.
Of course.
There isn't any fine or offense or imprisonment directly related to failure to check. But if an employer was, or an employee working for a company was to go and falsify an entry on these databases or misrepresent something, and apparently there's going to be a misrepresented and fraudulent register, that is going to be kept of the record of fraudulent and misrepresented CVs. But if you were, as an employer, to find out, for example, that your employee has a mark against his name on one of these databases, and you were to try and assist your employee by removing that discretion, then you would be liable for the 5 years imprisonment, alternatively a fine, or further alternatively a 5 year imprisonment and a fine.
And why would that be? Explain that to me in layman terms.
So there's an additional section that's been added into the Act. So there's 32A, which is what we've just discussed.
Yes.
So 32A relates specifically to an employer. 32B relates to employees. And although it relates to employees, the wording of the Act is a person guilty of an offence are the following persons. So that could be anyone. That, although it's geared towards an employee, it could be an employer who would either make these changes to the databases or go with an employee and decide, okay, fine, we understand that you don't have this particular qualification, but because we need you in a client-facing role and we need you to assist us in a client's environment, we will just simply cover up for you.
Mm.
And we'll tell our clients that actually you do have this qualification. We will, because we believe you have the skills, but you don't have the degree, we'll simply tell the client that you are fit for the job.
Okay.
You will then become one of those persons that is now falsifying a document and assisting in the falsification of that qualification.
Which basically boils down to it is fraud on both the employee side and then the employer.
Yes.
Part, but there's a bigger impact here. We spoke about it earlier, where we talked about the implication for first of all the company from a brand perspective, and secondly from a risk perspective. Tell me more about that.
So now we looking at this from an employer's perspective, but remember that, as you will well know, that employers are best served by, number one, protecting their employees and ensuring that the employees have information available to them, even if it's not in the best interest of the employee immediately. So one of the things that we've suggested that employers do is use an agency like yourselves to verify whether the CVs are correct. And why this is important is, as we discussed, there's obviously damages that can flow from an employee who misrepresents. But in order to make sure that the employee is aware of this, we recommend that employers include in the employment contract an acknowledgement which the employee will sign. And this acknowledgement will simply state that the employee has acknowledged that the information on his CV is true and correct, and furthermore, that he understands or she understands that should the information on the CV be incorrect, that the company will suffer losses or damages,
mm-hmm.
and that in that event, the employee will be liable for an immediate termination and or be liable for compensating the company for the damages suffered.
Okay, and what example would you use to illustrate this? Where would it be practically, you know, applicable? Would it be in a industry where there's machinery being operated? Would it be applicable to all financial services? Would it, you know, where can you highlight where this will take effect, especially?
I would say across the board, it's very, very relevant, and I'll give two examples. So one will be a client-facing example. So say you have an employee that you've now hired, and he represents to you that he can install certain PABXs, which are the voice telecom systems, and he has knowledge of this system because he studied and has a part-time qualification. You then send him to a client, he installs the system, and a week later the client calls you back and expresses their dissatisfaction with installation due to the fact that the system is now not working or whatever the case may be. In that instance, your company will now be suffering, number one, reputational damages, number two, a possible claim from your client, and number three, which is often the case in these sort of companies, your company would most likely be liable to your supplier because now you've damaged the supplier's reputation. So you'll be liable on all those three fronts. Another example would be a manufacturing company who hires an engineer. And you are hiring the engineer with the purpose of constructing a particular electronic device, say a cell phone, hypothetically. And this engineer warrants that he has certain qualifications and he knows how to build a particular part of the cell phone. You then go on and produce thousands of devices, and next thing you know, devices on the market and they are exploding. We've heard that story before.
Yeah.
But you cannot then turn around and seek to hold the employee liable, because number one, it's not going to serve the company. The employee doesn't have the funds to now be recouped from, and secondly, all the claims brought by the customers will be against yourself as an employer. So trying to avoid these situations is key up front.
But this might also be applicable to even your labor industry, where we're seeing a lot of external HR consultants providing advice on the latest labor law, or representing companies, you know, as an external resource at the CCMA, claiming to have the knowledge and the skills, or perhaps even an HR degree or a relevant labor law degree, you know, or specific skills within those fields, you know, representing the company within the CCMA, etc., but they do not have an HR degree. They do not have those tertiary qualifications or experience to substantiate that. So, you know, even on that front, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, that has an implication where the company is placing their trust in that employee, in the external provider as well, to be able to give them sound and professional advice to assist with these labor issues. You know, and that might have a bounce back effect as well. And then from what you mentioned before, you know, the it's fine to talk about all of this and say there's a possibility, there are laws, there is an implication of fraud. But if we turn this around, you know, let's assume I did not do the necessary checks as an employer. I employed this employee. Surely I have to take some responsibility at the time when I find out, you know, things are not what they seem, or the qualifications presented is now not what was presented. What would the protection be for the employee that was appointed? Just to throw the other side of the coin. Obviously, the employee must have been aware that they did not meet the requirements, that they did not have the degree. So there's an admission of guilt somewhere in there. But I've now been appointed. I've worked for the company for however long, 8 months, a year. Now there's an audit being done. It gets discovered that the qualification, you know, that I presented is not actually, you know, there. What is the protection around that for the, if any, for the employee or the side of the employee in this case?
So it would depend on the, because now we're in a situation where the two parties have entered into contractual relationship, being the employment contract, which is supplemented with obviously the common law. And depending on what that contract states, the employee might have certain recourse. However, just off the bat, it would depend obviously what the implications of the discovery are. Would the auditors be now wanting to hold the company liable, or will they be turning to the employee and wanting to be holding him or her liable? I'm imagining a case where this is discovered and the employer then decides that it needs to dismiss this employee.
Yes, as an example.
In those sort of circumstances, then the employee could allege that the employer was negligent in not checking and verifying the qualifications,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to be quite an onerous task because one would then have to ask the employee himself or herself, how would the company not know that your verification was authentic?
Yes.
And what was your knowledge of this?
Of course. And we're making assumptions now. Obviously, you mentioned the clause that you advise all clients to include in the employment contracts, that the new employee would warrant that whatever they put on their CV as qualifications or as professional experience is correct and true. We're assuming that was not done. We're assuming the verification checks was not done for whatever reason. As you mentioned, HR is busy. They've got a lot of things to do. This might have been a year ago, just before, you know, the new act was signed into law. It's now a year later. It's now discovered. You know, that sort of scenario is what we're talking about. Would it warrant immediate dismissal? Would the employee have recourse? And would the employer just be able to say, sorry, we should have done it. We did not do it. Unfortunately, we have to let you go. Goodbye. Would that be a fair avenue for an employer to take or to go down?
Yeah, obviously, depending on the role that the employee has taken in the company and whether or not there could be other options available to him at that particular company. But most employment contracts might not contain a clause like we've suggested, but they might contain a goodwill clause or a good faith clause, which requires both parties to act as honestly as possible.
Yes.
Even if it doesn't, the common law requires employees to act in an honest and truthful manner. So I think in those circumstances, it would be within the employer's right to allege that the employee has breached his or her common law duty to act truthfully. Now, it would depend then again on the seriousness of this misrepresentation. Is it a post-degree qualification that's only a diploma, for example, and not that material to the role that the employee has taken up?
Yes.
Or is it a more material misrepresentation in terms of an actual degree that is required for the role that was a requirement set out when the job was put on the market?
Yes. So you mentioned just a few sentences ago, you know, it depends if there might be an alternative position within the company. And I think there's a general assumption, and I'm obviously asking the question, would it relate to this, where should you, for instance, be, for instance, disabled, or you have a serious health issue, it's normally, you know, within the company's responsibility to find you an alternative position within the company that is suited to your specific personal circumstances before they consider to just dismiss you. Would that also be applicable in this case, where I was appointed for a certain position, client-facing, you know, honors degree was required, etc., etc. It's now discovered I don't have that. Would it be a fair assumption that the employer has the responsibility, the same responsibility in this case, to say, let's look at what alternative is available, or would they be fully within their right to say, sorry, you know, you did not act in good faith, this constitutes fraud, goodbye?
I think because, for example, we were talking about degrees. That's a material misrepresentation. It goes to had that person not represented or misrepresented that had this degree, whether or not they'd actually be employed at the end of it. So because that affected their employment and them coming on with the company, that results in a breakdown of trust relationship between employer and employee. And that's a recognized relationship, that we do recognize that there's some level of trust there. We mentioned the goodwill, the good faith. So it's a very nuanced discussion. I think it is on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, it is, at the end of the day, a breakdown in that relationship, and that could result in them being quite fair in saying, listen, this doesn't work for us, this employment relationship cannot continue, might continue, as we said, in a different role, or it might, you know, end right there and there. And obviously the employer still has a duty to follow due process and go follow all the normal rules of labour. But it's, I don't think it's unfair to say that that relationship actually might be terminated as a result of a material misrepresentation.
There's definitely a clear distinction between the two examples.
Okay.
With, like Nadia's pointed out, it's a material misrepresentation on the part of the employee, and it's either due to their gross negligence that they haven't verified with the institution where they obtained the degree whether or not the degree was authentic. Alternatively, they've purposefully included that qualification in their CV, where someone who has the misfortune of suffering a disability, is that misfortune is not due to their own negligence or intention, and therefore it would be quite different circumstances. I mean, the Act has gone as far as to say that a person is guilty of an offence if that person falsifies or fraudulently claims to be holding a degree, qualification, or part qualification. So it's almost implied by the legislation that even if you falsely or fraudulently, and it's distinguishing between those two scenarios, because fraud obviously requires intention or
exactly.
gross negligence, but the false, I mean, obviously there's not much case law out yet, as of yet, dealing with the interpretation of this particular act. But if you simply falsely represent a particular qualification, there might be no intention on your part to be holding that out as your own when it's not.
Yes.
But you have falsified, and you are assumed to have falsified. So it seems to be placing quite a high onus on employees.
On the employees or on the employer?
On the employees.
On the employee first and foremost.
Yes.
Because, you know, as we said earlier, obviously, you know, the markets have changed. There are quite a lot of retrenchments at the moment. A lot of people, you know, we've got the highest unemployment rate in the world. So a lot of people are looking for work, and people are becoming desperate. So, you know, in a real world, people are saying, I'll take my chances. You know, they're looking for a degree. I don't have a degree. I'll pretend I have a degree. Let me just get the job first. And then I'm obviously, you know, this is you know, as an example, there are people that are taking those chances. And they're saying, well, you know, I'll ride the wave until I get caught out. So once again, you know, the bottom line from our point of view is that we always do the verification checks as part of our service, because it's important for us, not only for our reputation but also for our client's reputation, to ensure that what is presented to the client before they employ somebody, or before we send somebody to that client, that it is indeed true and correct. But the layman out there in the rest of the country is saying, I'll take my chances, you know, I'll wait till they do an audit. Maybe they'll never check the register. Maybe they'll never find out. So what, in your opinion, is the bottom line here? You know, what should employers and clients do to protect themselves, except in, you know, using a proper verification agency? But there seems to be we know about this, but, you know, when will it really be implemented? When will it really be checked? I might never be caught out. I'll rather have 2 or 3 years of a salary and take my chances. What is your opinion on that?
It's by no means a victimless crime. You know, the thoughts that someone might have of, you know, 3 years, we can, you know, just ride it out. I think a lot of people would fall into that trap. However, as an employer, you do need to protect yourself. And like you said, there's agencies such as yourselves that can assist with that. And then there's also the legal assistance that can come in. And CareDip has, you know, outlined sort of a brief and sort of the sort of major points that would come into a employment contract and certain clauses that could be in there to protect employer.
Yes, and that's obviously where you come in to assist employers with proper clauses and, you know, the fact that you mentioned they need to warrant that the info in their CV is correct to make sure that your employment contract is correct and that this warranty after the implementation of the new law is part of your contract. And they can obviously also contact you for advice on this, and if they have a concern within their company, to assist them with it or to deal with it properly. But what I'm trying to get to is there really, you know, do people, the layman in the street, really have a regard for this, and has it really sunk in since August last year that there's really going to be an implication that I might really go to jail, I might be committed of, you know, fraudulent activities because of the qualifications or what happened on my CV. Is it real, and do you think people have a regard for it out there in the rest of the country? And
whether or not they have regard for it, I mean, is unfortunately not going to come to their assistance, because now it is law in South Africa. And what is more important, I think, to recognize and understand is that the 5-year sentence or the possibility of a 5-year sentence is often disregarded by persons because they see the fine as being an alternative and think, okay, I'll maybe just get a fine and it won't be too bad.
Almost like a traffic fine.
Yes, exactly.
Know,
but the Act,
pay,
yeah. Yeah, the Act sets out exactly what mitigating factors will be considered when the sentence is considered. So you obviously will normally, in criminal law, and there's actually debate in my mind whether this is a criminal offence or just a civil offence. But because it's in the legislation stipulated as a civil offence.
Yes.
But maybe Nadi can add to that. But the Act says quite clearly that once someone's found guilty, they will then be brought to sentencing. And in the sentencing, the court will decide and consider whether or not the person committed with the intent to gain financial benefits, reward, or compensation. Now, if you take up in position of employment, having misrepresented on your CV, you obviously have taken up that position.
Of course. Yeah.
To gain some sort of financial benefit.
Yes.
And with that in mind, you are more than likely going to receive quite a hefty fine or possibly some sort of an imprisonment. So, although it might not be taken too seriously at the moment, I think it needs to be taken a lot more seriously by employees on the market who are looking to get some sort of benefit out of misrepresenting a qualification on their CV.
And how can you assist clients out there? What would be your step one, step two, step three? It's now been a few months since August. Yes, there's employment contracts. What advice can you give to our clients and other, you know, employers out there? Where should they start? What is the process, best process to follow to make sure that they do not find themselves in this difficult situation?
I think primarily is to assist the employers with the employment contract and ensure that it is watertight, not only on this front, so the clauses we've discussed earlier, ensuring that, you know, the employee acknowledges and accepts that any misrepresentation on the CV will be considered act worthy of immediate termination or dismissal, and that he further acknowledges, or she further acknowledges and accepts, that it will not only be a grounds for dismissal, but it will also be grounds for a claim by the company against that employee.
Even if they did not suffer direct financial losses?
Well,
would there have to have been proven financial loss?
So there would have to probably be proven financial loss, but there would obviously be a grey area as to reputational damages.
Yes.
And what those are. So it could be a possibility to include a further clause to state that the employee acknowledges that such conduct might result in reputational damages being suffered, and in such circumstances a external auditor will compile a report which will quantify those damages, and that the employer will then present that to the employee as evidence of the financial loss that has been suffered.
Nadia, any other advice from your side for employers, clients, or employees, possible candidates that's looking for a job out there? What advice would you give them in this difficult time when it is hard to find a job? What advice would you give?
I think that there have been a few more cases of these sort of bogus institutions, these people, these places coming up saying they can give you some type of degree, these sort of independent institutions that aren't necessarily registered with the appropriate boards. So that, unless you've gone to, for example, like a university, these big universities that we all know and, trust, that if you are going to go into an independent institution, to just go and make sure it's within your rights, you're paying for, the services, to go and make sure that your degree is a recognized degree. So if you are, a candidate trying to make its way or yourself into the working world, that you protect yourself.
Mm.
And that, as much as it is the reason that people lie on their CVs, and the list is extensive, but it ultimately comes down to needing a job. Like you've mentioned, the economic climate at the moment is difficult. That just be truthful on your CV, and where you can, there's a fine line between putting your best foot forward, really representing yourself in the best light, and then lying. And it's very obvious if you're going to lie about, saying you have a qualification when you really don't. That's very easy to verify. In any other place, that's maybe a bit more of a grey area, to walk the safer line and to rather be truthful in everything that you say on the CV, as opposed to trying to over embellish. To be cautious about that, and to seek out whatever advice that you can get from people around you, to have a look at your CV, see, does this actually put my best foot forward in a truthful way, or is it over embellishing? And then obviously for HR departments, the onus is that much more onerous, that they need to start considering CVs with a much more
serious
eye, and to consider that qualifications and whatever you see cannot be taken at face value.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, Caleb, if they do, any of our clients or employers need advice or guidance on this, where would they get hold of you? What would be the best way to contact you to assist them?
I think the best way is probably by email. And we'll include those details with a link to the podcast, as we normally do. But I think, having said that, we would encourage potential clients to reach out, even if they don't necessarily intend taking the matter that much further, and just reach out for cursory advice. We're more than happy to assist them with that, be it responding to an email or taking a phone call, just helping them off the cuff, arranging a quick consult, and just advising them as such, without going on a long journey together,
for sure,
as it were.
For sure. I think that's a great start. And thank you for giving your advice, and as always, assisting us and our clients with the legal implications and the bigger picture, that we don't always consider from a legal and law perspective. We appreciate it. And thanks for joining us today and your time.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.